This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Ready? Okay. Give me a beach.
Beach!
Give me great food.
Tacos!
Give me adventure.
Hiking!
Give me a date night.
Sunset cruise!
Give me some smiles.
Cheese!
Give me more beaches.
Beaches!
What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hello and welcome to Savor, a production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we're talking about the Negroni.
Yes, another cocktail hour.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, as always with these, drink responsibly.
Yep.
I will say Negronis now make me think of Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Thanks to Joe McCormick over at Stuff to Blow Your Mind, who is a part of our campaign. He always makes Negronis for us, should we desire them.
He's been hosting over at his house and has just been delightfully crafting Negronis for us while we play.
Yes. It's wonderful. I was trying to explain it to him the first time we were playing where I was like, I have like gin. So this is a step up for me. I'm very excited about what's happening now.
Yeah.
I'm very appreciative. Also, he always hands them to me and says, thanks, DM. And I'm like, Joe. This is very, very, very sweet.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, we were talking before we started recording, and but neither of us have the ingredients to make a Negroni.
No.
Both of us only have gin. So it could be like a deconstructed Negroni.
That's what I'm calling it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, no, I very much have a craving that I'm hoping the next time we play Dungeons and Dragons, which is soon, we haven't played in a minute, so hopefully soon.
It will be
satiated. It also reminds me of back when we had happy hours at our office when we were going into an office before the pandemic. And we used to have like a place in our building that would do these Monday happy hours and a Negroni.
Oh, yeah. Oh, gosh. I miss the Mercury. That was such a great bar.
Yes. And also Biltong Bard would do liquid lunch.
They had so dangerous.
Oh, I know. But they had Negronis as well as a part of that. Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting because it's a drink that, as we've done this research, has made me miss these social times when I would drink it.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's not a thing I've ever really made at home. I'll make like a Manhattan at home. I went through a pretty serious Manhattan period during the first part of lockdown, or not lockdown, shutdown. Anyway, that sounded way more serious than it was for a second there. And then I quickly realized that I shouldn't do that. I should not have the means to make myself a Manhattan at home at any given point in time. Because then I'll just drink Manhattans. Which, wild, tasty, you know, like, again, drink responsibly.
Yes.
Negroni, there is a Negroni week. Mm-hmm. This is a corporately designed kind of holiday week that is nonetheless pretty delightful. It is shifted over the years. It used to be in June, but in 2020 and 2021, it's happening in September. This year, it will be September 13th through 19th. So we're ahead of the curve for once.
That's definitely what we intended.
No.
Planned.
yes. For kind of like a base to this episode, you can also see our episode on Amaro from October of 2018, which includes a lovely ghost story read by Not Us. It's very Old Gods of Appalachia, plus our previous cocktail hours, especially the gin and tonic episode, which we classicked in July of 2020.
Save Reverb, created by Lauren Vogelbaum.
Classicked. That's what we did.
Yes. The Amaro episode is a really fun one, too. So I really... Both of those are two that I reference in my own. I know a lot of you listeners write in and are like, oh, when I'm at a party, I bring up this fact. These two episodes.
Yeah, same. And especially in the Amaro episode, we interview the lovely folks at Etta Rhine, which is a distillery out of Asheville, which we got to visit while we were up there. And the ghost story in question is the story that inspired their name. And yeah, I especially as Etta Rhine has gotten wider distribution, I've just been talking them up to all kinds of humans,
yes.
And love doing that. Great stuff. Oh, I need some. Okay. All right, cool.
All right. Well, before we go too far down the path of desire, perhaps we should get to our question.
I guess so.
The Negroni. What is it?
Well, the Negroni is a cocktail made with gin, sweet vermouth, and a type of Amaro called Campari. Traditionally, you can put other stuff in there, but that's the basic stuff. It is garnished with a slice of orange or a strip of orange peel, the latter sometimes flamed. It can be served chilled and straight up or over ice. A single large cube is pretty popular. And it's the drink is smooth and bittersweet and herbal, a little bit spicy or spiced, I guess, rather, but with this brightness underneath. And not to get like too poetic on y'all, like right off the bat, but it tastes like a summer night.
I should have next time we play Dungeons & Dragons, I should have some kind of like poetry off.
Oh, no.
Where you have to describe the Negroni and I shall judge from my dungeon master position.
Oh, gosh, that would be something that Ben Bolin would be amazing at, and that I would be like, give me a few weeks and I'll come up with an amazing entry.
I feel like all of you are really excellent at coming up with some perhaps less than traditional poetry, but poetry nonetheless.
We are a poetic group. It's true.
Yes.
It's true.
Uh-huh.
So let's break down all of those ingredients a little bit. So gin is a type of liquor made with a neutral spirit that's then infused with any number of botanicals during and or after distillation. The primary and necessary botanical is juniper, which is sort of bright and piney tasting. But ginneries all have their own complex blends of herbs and spices, and imbibers all have their own personal preferences. Some common additions include licorice or anise, cinnamon, citrus peel, nutmeg, saffron, savory, all kinds of barks and bits and stuff. Yes. But basically, gins are piney and dry with other herb and spice notes in there. Vermouth is a type of wine that has been infused with various botanicals like wormwood, saffron, coriander, chamomile, and or juniper, and then fortified with a little bit of neutral spirit like unaged brandy. The sweet type of vermouth is also sometimes called red vermouth or Italian vermouth because it is red and it originated in Italy. We say this every time we mention vermouth, but like we're going to have to do a whole episode or like few episodes on it at some point, forthcoming. And yeah, they can range quite a bit in final effect, but they're kind of semi-sweet to sweet and sort of savory herbal with a little bit of like drying tannin on the palate. Campari is a type of Amaro, Amaro being a broad category of liqueurs that are made with any number of botanicals. They're a little bit sweet like vermouth and more bitter than either gin or vermouth would be generally. Campari is a particular brand made with this proprietary recipe of over 60 herbs and fruit peels and tasty tree barks and etc. It's this brilliant translucent orange red in color. With an emphasis on like orangey lemony kind of notes. It's on the dry side and has, yeah, like sweet and savory herbs in there. It's also the original liquor that spawned the sprawling Campari Group beverage empire, which owns everything from Sky Vodka to Espolòn to Wild Turkey today.
Dang.
Yeah. Yeah. They're going places. The orange, so in cocktails, a strip of orange peel, sometimes called a zest or a twist, is taking just the bright aromatic oil-filled part of an orange's skin off with a sharp knife or another tool, leaving behind the bitter white pith. And depending on the orange in question, dropping this in a drink or rubbing it on the rim or whatever will add a bright kind of floral citrus bitter scent to the drink and a tiny bit of oil on top on the palate. And you can also hold an orange strip to an open flame for a few seconds to char it slightly and add kind of deeper bitter flavors and caramel flavors to what you're doing. It's nice. It's flashy in a bar. Don't set yourself on fire.
Please don't.
But but the result of all of this is, yeah, just a glassful of like bittersweet herbs and citrus and spices. And because of the inclusion of an Amaro and sweet vermouth, it's often been considered a pre-dinner drink to stimulate the stomach or the digestive system. But it's evolved into like an anytime sort of cocktail.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The generally accepted recipe calls for equal parts gin, vermouth, and Campari. But of course, people like to argue about whether a different ratio is better, and there are all kinds of riffs on it. Some variations that I would argue wander into like whole different but related drink territory, but I'm not going to tell you what you can and can't call your drinks. Yeah, you can use different kinds of vermouth, different kinds of Amari or orange liquor elements, an orange wedge, right? Instead of a peel, you can top it with soda. You can add a few dashes of bitters. You can add an egg and shake it to make a flip. You can use different base liquors than gin. You can add sweeteners or sourers. You can serve it frozen. You can put fruit in it like it's a sangria. I can't tell you not to. Some call the Boulevardier a spin on the Negroni. And I guess to be fair, it is technically a Negroni with bourbon instead of gin. I feel like New Orleans would have something to say about that, though.
No. No, never.
But yeah, you can do any number of things with this basic concept of the cocktail.
Yeah, I guess I'd have to look into the history of the Boulevardier to wonder if the Negroni is a spin on that drink. Another day.
I don't dare conjecture.
Let us not dare do it. What about the nutrition?
Drink responsibly.
Yes. Yes.
That's it. Yeah, that's okay. All I got. Yeah.
Cool. Numbers. We do have some for you.
We do.
It's the Negroni is the second best-selling drink in the world by some accounts. I couldn't really nail down specifics, but that's what some people report.
Yeah. As of the 2010s, it started ranking way up there in surveys and polls that some of these like bar associations, not legal bar associations, like bartender associations started conducting. Or, I mean, I guess I didn't consult any legal bar associations, so I can't tell you.
Oh, man. Well, we should. We'll get back to
you. We should. Negroni Week is the aforementioned kind of corporate holiday is a marketing slash fundraising thing created by the Campari company in collaboration with Imbibe magazine. And during this week, bars and restaurants around the world will feature Negronis and Negroni-inspired cocktails and then make donations, hypothetically like a portion of the proceeds of the sales of these drinks, to one or more of that year's official charitable causes. And in return, we'll be featured in, like, central marketing pushes. It's pretty fun and or slightly exhausting. But, yeah, like, over 12,000 venues now participate every year. They've raised near about $3 million for charities in less than a decade. And $790,000 of that was in 2019 alone.
Yeah, I definitely encountered Negroni Week at a bar too. And I'm like, oh, okay, get a Negroni.
Yeah. I'm like, you don't really have to twist my arm. That's fine.
But here I am. I'm happy to get one if it is Negroni Week. A video of actor Stanley Tucci making a Negroni during lockdown went viral.
Oh, Stanley Tucci. Oh, my whole nerd heart. Oh, my goodness. All right. So this video, if you haven't seen it, and actually I hadn't. But I was delighted to go down this rabbit hole. So this video has been viewed 1.1 million times on his Instagram account and has been reposted various places. For example, it's gotten another 6.2 million views on Twitter. There was a lot of thirst, drink thirst and Tucci thirst surrounding this video. And also, how did I miss that he does like a lot of cooking and cocktails? I'm so out of touch. He's got two cookbooks out already.
You're out of Tucci.
I'm out of Tucci touch. Heck. He's also got a memoir coming out in October called Taste, My Life Through Food. Stanley Tucci, call us.
Oh, yeah. We can really boost your profile. You get on Savor, you're going to go to the top, kid.
Absolutely.
Or we could just drink Negronis. That's also
either.
Cool.
Either. Both.
Both. In the words of Orson Welles, the bitters are excellent for your liver. The gin is bad for you. They balance each other. And if James Bond wasn't feeling the martini, he might go for a Negroni.
Or perhaps a related cocktail, the Americano. This is a predecessor to the Negroni that doesn't have gin, but rather soda water, plus the sweet vermouth and the Campari, and is served on the rocks with a lemon wedge, making it like lighter and more summery. In the very first Bond book, he's in this French cafe, and author Ian Fleming is setting him up as being, like, confident and sophisticated and, like, a little bit flamboyant. You know, he would never have whiskey or vodka in such a place, but he goes for an Americano, so.
Never. the aforementioned Biltong Bar, the Liquid Lunch, they used to do, I think it was a Negroni. But it might have been an Americano. But it said something in the description along the lines of, like, what James Bond really drank.
Oh.
And I was like, I don't know. Okay. But hey, that did come up in several sources. People brought this up, so.
Yeah, yeah.
Now you know. We do have a lot of mysterious and interesting history for you behind this one.
Oh, and as with any cocktail hour, yes, we do. Yes. But first, we've got a quick break for a word from our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it! Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And yes, see our gin episode. It's really good. Required listening for this one.
Yeah, yeah. In short, history of gin, the Dutch were creating this juniper-flavored spirit called a Jenever by about the 1500s, which would branch into gins over the next few centuries. The predecessors to vermouth also began around the same time, but in Italy. And what we now know as sweet vermouth developed in the late 1700s there.
Campari was invented in 1860, which is, of course, a key ingredient for the Negroni.
It came out of this Milanese establishment called Café Campari, where one Gaspare Campari blended his personal eponymous Amaro tinted brilliant red using carmine, which is this food-grade dye made from crushed cochineal bugs.
Mm-hmm. Also used in lipstick in early days.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Still used in some things. Not vegan applications. Campari itself would switch to a lab-created substitute for most markets in 2006. But anyway. And then oranges. Oranges had been grown in the Mediterranean since around 1000 CE. We've got an episode on those, too.
So many episodes.
Yeah.
Yes. And as with all of our cocktail hours, this one has multiple origin stories, all of them a bit on the murky side. The most popular one goes thusly. In Florence, Italy, in 1919, Count Camillo Negroni asked bartender Fosco Scarselli over at Cafe Cassoni to make his Americano stronger by swapping out the usual soda water with gin. Scarselli allegedly did so and went one further, using an orange garnish in the place of the typical lemon in an Americano. Scarselli's creation was popular and it became a go-to for cocktail drinkers, so the story goes. Mm-hmm. By some historical accounts, this iteration had only a few drops of gin, though.
Yeah.
Yes. And this Negroni fellow led an interesting life. After arriving in the U.S. in 1892, while in his 20s, he apparently spent some time traveling across the country as a cowboy. He also earned a name for himself as a banker and a well-known riverboat gambler.
But, okay.
Yes. Historians think it was the time he spent living in London, and specifically London's gin scene, that led to him potentially creating one of the most well-known cocktails of our time. Okay. The Negroni family did not wait long to found the Negroni Distillery in 1919 in Italy. They manufactured and sold a ready-for-consumption Negroni under the name Antico Negroni, and this distillery is still open to this day. Although I visited their website, and if I was saying I had invented the Negroni, I would put that out right in front. They didn't really seem to do that.
Okay.
They didn't even really give a date, because I was just trying to clarify, like, did this actually happen in 1919?
Oh, sure. And
their website did not make it readily clear. But hey, you know?
You know?
It's still up and running. And yes, there isn't a lot of evidence to back this whole story up, even though it is the one that is told the most often. But there are some really fun tidbits that come up when people are talking about it. For instance, in 1920, one Francis Harper wrote, "I'm assuming to count Negroni." Wasn't clear, but I think so.
Okay.
Quote, "My dear Negroni, you say you can drink, smoke, and I am sure laugh just as much as ever. I feel you are not much to be pitied. You must not take more than 20 Negronis in one day."
Goodness.
Goodness, indeed.
I agree with that advice.
Yes, I do as well. But twist? A descendant of the Negroni family named Noel Negroni has spoken out about this whole thing, claiming that it was, in fact, Corsican General Pascal Olivier de Negroni de Cardi who invented the drink, and that there was no Count Negroni at all.
Yeah. So this story places the creation of the Negroni not in Italy at all, but in Senegal, and earlier, like perhaps in the 1860s.
Yes, and this Pascal fellow also led an interesting life as a veteran of the Franco-Prussian War. He was 18 when he joined the French army in 1847. In 1870, he received recognition as the officer of the Legion of Honor. He spent time as a prisoner of war and was promoted to brigadier general in 1884. 5 years later, in 1889, he was named commander of the Legion of Honor. He retired in 1891, but before all of this, he apparently, maybe, had something to do with creating the Negroni. From 1855 to 1864, he served as a base commander in Senegal, and during this time, he wrote a letter to his brother that read, "Incidentally, did you know that the vermouth based cocktail that I invented in St. Louis is a great hit at the Lunaville Officers Club?" If that's true, I love the incidentally.
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 Like, now that we've talked about much more important things, let's throw a tidbit in here that's going to confound historians centuries later.
Including us podcasters who are just trying to get to the bottom of the Negroni.
Oh, okay. All right. So I was wrong when I said in Senegal, because that's a version of the story that I had read. But this makes it sound like it wasn't there at all, but rather later, maybe into the 1870s in the United States.
Oh,
anyway,
we don't know.
Well,
we're trying our best to present the facts, but
we're doing what we can.
Oof. Further backing up this whole story are alleged accounts of people who worked in bars and in medicine at the time in Senegal, who cited the Negroni and the, quote, "French army captain who created it." Reportedly, some of these stories even claim that the drink was created with the help of Pascal's wife. So, who knows?
We don't. We're reporting the many faceted facts.
Yes. Many faceted. A kaleidoscope of the Negroni. author of The Negroni, Gus Regan, believes that the Negroni comes from a drink dating back to the 1860s called the Milano Torino, which was itself a derivation of the Torino Milano.
Okay.
I don't know. These drinks got their name from the geographic location of their base ingredients, Campari from Milan and Amaro Cora from Turin. And this drink or these drinks are believed to have been invented in the 1860s in Milan at Cafe Camparino. Visiting affluent Americans may have requested soda water in their Milano Torinos, resulting in the Americano. Separate episode, I'm sure. Or possibly it was just renamed Americano because Americans liked it. Could have been any number.
Could have been any number of all of these.
Yes. There were a lot of Italian bartenders in France in the 1920s. Campari, the company, was also hardcore marketing to the French market at this time. And from this came a drink called the Campari Cardinal in 1926, which was really close to a Negroni. The Campari Mixte in 1928 was even closer. Within a year, over a half dozen bars in Paris were making something similar to these drinks.
Yeah. The Campari brand was holding these cocktail competitions in Paris around that time. And so I think that that's where some of these drinks got their start.
Right. And Nina Wilcox Putnam, who was an author, screenwriter, and columnist, she wrote in 1933, all Gaul was divided in three parts, one part gin, one part vermouth, and one part Italian bitters. Which is interesting because, as with a lot of these episodes, I'll be researching something and then I'm like, okay, here we go. Here's the date. And then I'll research something else. And it's like, no, okay, this is the date. And a part of this was really confusing because a lot of the people who have written about the history of the Negroni are specifically looking for the history of the equal parts recipe.
Right, right.
Which, according to most sources, did not happen until much later. But this, like, quote from this author sounds like, there you go. That's
that's it right there.
That's it. But other sources do not report this to be the case. Recipes from 1934 and 1943 suggest that drinks similar to the Negroni have been around, if not in the name, for a lot longer than perhaps we thought. And perhaps called the Campari Nette. There's even a printed recipe from 1929 that is essentially the Negroni, just under a different name. Some have even linked the invention of the Negroni to an 1895 American recipe. What?
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Mm. That being said, others argue the first written recipe that matches our more modern understanding of the Negroni appeared in Floridita Cocktails by Costantino Constante Ribalyaga, which may have been published in 1939 or after World War II. Hmm. Food historians have dug into that as well, which I love. This recipe is credited to Manuel Sanchez Maspons out of Havana. It wasn't the equal parts recipe, though. It called for two parts vermouth, one part gin, and one half part Campari. The equal parts recipe first appeared in print in 1947 in an Italian paper after a bar historian discovered this recipe in Cocktails Portfolio by Amadio Gandiglio. There was no date given on when that specifically was written. It's all a mess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, lots of, yes.
Yes.
Lots of mess.
Lots of mess. The Negroni may have been accepted in the U.S. as a part of a fascination around New Italy, what was called New Italy, something fancy and sophisticated in the eyes of American tourists, something celebrities drank. There was a whole list of celebrities that would drink the Negroni that people would watch from afar and think, if only I could be like Audrey Hepburn and the Negroni. Campari was a part of this, too. It was a bright, light, not too strong in terms of alcohol drink. It was easy to add to things to spruce up your drink. And speaking of, Campari almost went completely under during the wars. But by 1950, the company shipped 1 million liters of their product to Italian cities with only 990 liters to the U.S., shipped to the U.S., that didn't stop them from advertising in the U.S. in 1951. Of those 1 million liters in Italy, though, they seem to be disproportionately consumed at 2 Italian establishments, including Café Rosati, where head bartender Valentino Clementi claimed that the Negroni was, in fact, a creation of his.
Oh.
Right?
Oh, no.
Yes. In 1967, the story goes that a busy bartender in Milan accidentally poured Prosecco instead of gin when making a Negroni, making what would become known as a Negroni Sbagliato, which I'd never heard of. Have you heard of this?
I I hadn't until I did the reading for this episode, and it was one of the main riffs on a Negroni that I read about right up there next to the Boulevardier. So
sounds good.
Yeah. Sounds good. No, I love a cocktail that has sparkling wine in it. In terms of, I mean, it usually tastes delightful, and then after one, I'm like, I'm never going to drink again. I am going to have water for the rest of my life in order to make up for the delicious mistake I just made.
Right.
That's how I feel about French 75s as well.
Yep.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Some historians and bartenders have chronicled the dark ages of the Negroni, one being during the World Wars. And this is specifically in Italy, when gin was tough to come by in that country. And the other, when drinks in general were suffering, the 70s and 80s, which we've discussed.
Yes.
Yes. Which affected the quality of things like bitters and vermouth. So people were getting like really cheap bitters and really cheap vermouth. According to some Italian bartenders, ordering a Negroni in Italy during this time was the equivalent of an American ordering a vodka Red Bull in the 2000s. Basically, you were just looking to get trashed. This all changed with some marketing around bitters and vermouth in the 1990s that in turn impacted the Negroni. Some of this advertising included celebrities like Charlize Theron, and there's an apparently infamous ad for Campari called Red Passion, and I watched it, and I can't even explain it. Wow.
Was that the, didn't like, Fellini do a bunch of ads for them in the 80s? Was that part of his run?
I don't know.
Okay.
I feel like it's an ad I can't explain without offending people.
Oh. Goodness.
I could be wrong, but I mean, I recommend watching it. I was shocked.
Okay. Dang, I feel like you are relatively unflappable. So, so I'm impressed.
I was flapped.
Yeah, okay. So what had happened was Federico Fellini did this series of ads for Campari, or possibly a ad for Campari in the 80s. I want to say like 84. So your reaction to this, if y'all are not familiar with his work, it is a lot in a beautiful way. So like Satyricon, stuff like that is Fellini. So if, it was like that.
Okay. I'll try to give a brief description.
Oh, goodness.
Imagine you think you're watching a perfume ad.
Okay.
Because it's that same kind of like pursuit, like very heteronormative male, female pursuit thing happening. And then they catch up. They're in ball gowns. They're in a beautiful place. They catch up with each other. One of them spills Campari on the other person. Red everywhere, right? It turns out that the person you think is the man is actually a woman, and the person you think is a woman is actually a man.
Oh.
And that's the ad.
Campari. And,
I just was confused, mostly.
Yeah.
And surprised. That is also.
That is, to be fair, how I feel watching his films. So, yeah.
That, yeah, seems on par, like standard.
Yeah, yeah.
Regular. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. At any rate.
Okay, so Campari really leaned into this equal parts recipe in the 2000s, which really helped Negroni emerge from the dark ages of the 80s. The Negroni's popularity was also helped along with a boost of the popularity of gin.
Yeah, and the company itself really revamped during the early 2000s, starting with a number of beverage brand acquisitions and parlaying that into all of these huge marketing pushes. See above, re-Imbibe and Campari, starting up Negroni Week. That happened in 2013 with just 120 participating venues originally. They now have 100 times that, so good for them. Wow. Yeah. 2020 was a digital only event, but I believe it is going back to being partially, at least in person, in 2021. Campari Group threw a whole series of Negroni parties in 2019 to celebrate the ostensible 100th birthday of Negroni. Hashtag N100. That same year, an Italian documentary called Looking for Negroni debuted. I think it's out just this year in the United States. Also just this year, a whole book of Negroni recipes was published. It's called Negroni.
There you go.
There you go. Good
point. I'm curious. Willing to experiment. How many variations before it's no longer a Negroni? These are deep questions we must ask ourselves.
See, I'm not. It's like a Theseus's ship paradox. You know.
Yes, exactly like that. But with. The Negroni with a cocktail. There is a white Negroni, just like old White Vision.
Oh yeah. Oh goodness, can I tell you my favorite joke that that my friend Adam P. Nave made on Twitter like a couple days after that episode of WandaVision came out?
Please.
He was like, "Actually, Theseus's ship is Destiel."
I bet two listeners got that. And for you too, that was for you.
That was for y'all. You're welcome. Everyone else, I'm sorry. explaining that would only make it worse.
Yes. So. That would become a like 15-hour endeavor. But I really appreciate that. That's pretty funny.
Well, you're welcome.
Thank you.
The three of you are welcome.
Thank you.
So perhaps clearly this is all we have to say about the Negroni today.
Yes, for now. But we do have some listener mail for you.
We do, and we're going to get into that as soon as we get back from one more quick break for a word from our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy. And we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with Listener Mail. It's an intense cheers.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to remember the voices people do in D&D. or a Stanley Tucci voice. There were a lot of things that going on in my brain. So, you know. John wrote, and apologies in advance because there's a lot of pronunciation in this. I'm going to try my best.
Oh, goodness. Oh, okay. All right. Yeah.
Yes. Annie, in the Groot episode, you mentioned a Chinese tea in a red can with yellow lettering. This may be it. In Wikipedia, search for Wong Lo Cat, and it has photos of four such cans. Three cans have the same writing, but the third can is captioned 310 milliliters red can version produced by JDB, named JDB. It has different Chinese writing. An Amazon US search of Wong Lo Cat brings up a result, and so does Wong Lo Ji herbal tea. Those characters match four cans from the Wikipedia entry. I love this. This is like a detective search. on Amazon, Jia Duo Bao herbal tea brings up the other can. A tea I had in Sichuan restaurants in Western China had goji berries, rock sugar, chrysanthemum flowers, tea, and other stuff. Tastes kind of similar to the red yellow can. On Amazon, I found it. Search for Sunny Hill Chinese herbal tea, eight plants mix, chrysanthemum, hawthorn, wolfberry, cassia, honeysuckle, orange peel, gardenia, single crystal, rock sugar, 10 count tea bags. Wow. about $9, so cheaper than the cans. My favorite Chinese food, usually a morning street food actually, and a Google search said some Atlanta restaurants have it, is Jian Bing Guo Zi. Thin crepe topped with eggs, choice of spicy, not spicy sauces, green onion, and breadsticks. Thin and crispy or soft and fluffy, depends on the place. Wrapped up into a rectangle, eaten as a sandwich in China. Sending you names of things for you to search for. Sorry. a bit of work, but safest. Thank you for being you. I've listened to Sminty since the days of Kristen and Molly. Aww. Caroline, Emily, Eve's wonderful ladies also. Bridget is awesome. Annie and Samantha, I love your work with Sminty. Keep it up. Oh, thank you. Mm-hmm. I donated money to one of the organizations mentioned in an episode on voting in Georgia.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. I probably heard about Foodstuff Saver through an ad during Sminty episode. About 6 years ago, Kristen and Caroline were doing a live Facebook session, and in the comments, I entered something like, good morning from Japan, and I nearly fainted when Kristen said my name. I'm not into movies, gaming, or fan fiction, but I find those chats interesting. A peek into stuff I'm not into, get a glimpse of things outside of my little world. Love all the laughs in the episodes. The pimento cheese episode had me confused for quite a few minutes. I'm from Minnesota and recall a similar sandwich spread, but I've lived most of my adult life in Japan and a bit in China. Sminty and Foodstuff keep me connected to the U.S. in good ways, aware of issues I didn't know about previously. Big thank you to everyone involved in the podcast for all the work and being such great people. Oh,
thank you so much for listening. Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. It's so funny because when people say things like, oh, when someone said my name, it meant so much to me. It means so much to us when you write to us. It really does.
Yeah, it is incredible to me. Literally every time someone is like, oh, hey, I listened. I'm like, what? And they're like, oh, and I liked it. I'm like, really?
Yes.
Like, holy heck.
Are Dungeons and Dragons comments? Yes.
it can be a really like isolating form of performance doing podcasting, because it's just me and Annie on like a Skype call. We're both just in our houses.
And it's just like, after this happens, does anyone actually listen to it? So it's really beautiful to hear from you all. And thank you for your detective work on this. A lot of messages about this canned tea that I've spoken about. I'm very, very excited to see if any of them are correct. I suspect one of them must be. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Future legwork, but good. Yes. Good. Initial searching. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Lucas wrote, was listening to your episode on pimento cheese, and it brought back some happy memories. See, pimento cheese has a big part to play in the start of my wife's and my relationship. There's a restaurant in Columbia, South Carolina, where we were both attending seminary, called De Patro's, and it had the most amazing pimento cheese dip with wonderfully crispy on the outside, chewy on the inside pita chips that we would always get. We had been good friends for some time, but feelings were starting to change, and I wanted to have a conversation with her about trying out dating each other. This was the restaurant we went to, and over pimento cheese dip and pita chips, we agreed we liked each other. And the rest, as they say, is history. Well, now we're both pastors in Northwest Wisconsin, and in the town where she was serving, there was this small town butchery grocery store called a butchery shop. And what do you know? They sold pimento cheese. I was so surprised when she came home with a container of it, because I'd always thought of pimento cheese as a Southern thing, like y'all talked about in the episode. Now it's a nice little reminder of the South while we're up here. On a kind of related note, I wanted to see if y'all would be interested in an episode on lutefisk. I serve a church that does an annual supper centered on lutefisk, and there are some die-hard fans. One nonagenarian has been coming to this supper since it started 70 years ago. I've heard it has a very different reception in Scandinavia, like a lot of immigrant foods, so that might be cool. Same with, I'm not sure how to say this, lefse, a kind of potato flatbread crepe, if you haven't experienced it before. I have not. And on a decidedly unrelated note, I just wanted to share that every time y'all open with the question and there's that chime where Annie asks, XYZ, what is it? I always picture a dramatic face turn to Lauren and a raised eyebrow. Don't know if y'all do that, but it's my headcanon.
Kinda. I always do like a sweeping arm gesture.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a really big, it's a really big opening of the question.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
Also, I love hearing stories like this of like we met or this emotional moment or big key moment in your lifetime was over a food item. And now that food item is forever associated.
Oh, so wonderful.
It is. Thanks to those listeners for writing in. If you would like to write to us, you can. Our email is hello@savorpod.com.
We're also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at SavorPod, and we do hope to hear from you. Savor is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit Pronamel.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.